Chapter 1. Robert Langdon awoke peacefully, enjoying the gentle strains of classical music from his phone's alarm on the bedside table. Grieg's morning mood was probably an obvious choice, but he had always considered it the perfect 4 minutes of music to start his day. As the woodwinds swelled, Langdon savored the uncertainty of not being able to recall quite where he was. Ah, yes, he remembered, smiling to himself. The city of 100 spires. In the dim light, Langdon surveyed the room's massive arched window, flanked by an antique Edwardian dresser and an alabaster lamp. The plush, hand-knotted carpet was still scattered with rose petals from last night's turndown service. Langdon had come to Prague 3 days earlier and, as he had on previous visits, checked into the Four Seasons Hotel. When the manager insisted on upgrading Langdon's reservation to the 3-bedroom royal suite, he wondered if it was due to his own brand loyalty or, more likely, to the prominence of the woman with whom he was traveling.
"Our most celebrated guests deserve our most celebrated accommodation," the manager had insisted.
The suite included 3 separate bedrooms with ensuite baths, a living room, a dining room, a grand piano, and a central bay window with a lavish arrangement of red, white, and blue tulips, a welcome gift from the U.S. Embassy. Langdon's private dressing room offered a pair of brushed wool slippers monogrammed with the initials R.L. "Something tells me that's not Ralph Lauren," he thought, impressed by the personalized touch. Now, as he luxuriated in bed and listened to the music from his alarm, he felt a tender hand touch his shoulder.
"Robert," a soft voice whispered.
Langdon rolled over and felt his pulse quicken. She was there, smiling at him, her smoky gray eyes still half asleep, her long black hair tousled around her shoulders. "Good morning, beautiful," he replied. She reached over and stroked his cheek, the scent of Ballade Sauvage still on her wrists. Langdon admired the elegance of her features. Despite being 4 years older than Langdon, she was more stunning every time he saw her. The deepening laugh lines, the faint wisps of gray in her dark hair, her playful eyes, and that mesmerizing intellect. Langdon had known this remarkable woman since his days at Princeton, where she was a young assistant professor while he was an undergrad. His quiet schoolboy crush on her had gone either unnoticed or unrequited, but they'd enjoyed a flirtatious, platonic friendship ever since. Even after her professional career skyrocketed and Langdon became a high-profile professor known throughout the world, the two of them had kept in casual contact. Timing is everything, Langdon now realized, still marveling at how quickly they had fallen for each other during this spontaneous business trip. As morning mood crescendoed into the full orchestration of the theme, he pulled her close with a strong arm, and she nuzzled into his chest.
"Sleep okay?" he whispered.
"No more bad dreams?" She shook her head and sighed.
"I'm so embarrassed. That was awful."
Earlier in the night, she had awoken in terror from an exceptionally vivid nightmare, and Langdon had needed to comfort her for nearly an hour before she could get back to sleep. The dream's unusual intensity, Langdon assured her, had been the result of her ill-advised nightcap of bohemian absinthe, which Langdon had always believed should be served with a disclaimer, popular during the Belle Epoque for its hallucinogenic properties.
"Never again," she assured him.
Langdon reached over and turned off the music.
"Close your eyes. I'll be back in time for breakfast." "Stay with me," she teased, holding him. "You can skip 1 day of swimming."
"Not if you want me to remain a chiseled younger man," he said, sitting up with a lopsided grin. Each morning, Langdon had jogged the 3 kilometers to Strahov Swimming Center for his morning laps.
"It's dark out," she pressed. "Can't you just swim here?"
"In the hotel pool?" Why not? It's water.
It's tiny. 2 strokes and I'm finished.
There's a joke there, Robert, but I'll be kind.
Langdon smiled. Funny girl. Go back to sleep and I'll meet you for breakfast.
She pouted, threw a pillow at him, and rolled over.
Langdon donned his faculty-issue Harvard sweats and headed for the door, choosing to take the stairs rather than the suite's cramped private elevator. Downstairs, he strode through the elegant hallway that connected the hotel's Baroque riverfront annex with the building's lobby. Along the way, he passed an elegant display case marked Prague Happenings, featuring a series of framed posters announcing this week's concerts, tours, and lectures. The glossy poster at the center made him smile. Charles University Lecture Series welcomes to Prague Castle internationally acclaimed noetic scientist, Dr. Catherine Solomon.
Good morning, beautiful, he mused, admiring the headshot of the woman he had just kissed upstairs.
Catherine's lecture last night had been standing room only. No small feat, considering she had spoken in Prague Castle's legendary Vladislav Hall, a cavernous, vaulted chamber used during the Renaissance to host indoor jousting competitions with knights and horses in full regalia. The lecture series was one of Europe's most respected and always drew accomplished speakers and enthusiastic audiences from around the world. Last night had been no exception, and the packed hall erupted with applause when Catherine was introduced.
Thank you, everyone, Catherine said, taking the stage with a confident calm.
She wore a white cashmere sweater and designer slacks that fit her flawlessly.
I'd like to begin tonight by answering the one question I am asked almost every day.
She grinned and pulled the microphone off its stand.
What the hell is noetic science?
A wave of laughter rolled through the hall as the audience settled in.
Simply stated, Catherine began, noetic science is the study of human consciousness. Contrary to what many believe, consciousness research is not a new science. It is, in fact, the oldest science on Earth. Since the dawn of history, we have sought answers to the enduring mysteries of the human mind, the nature of consciousness and of the soul. And for centuries, we have explored these questions primarily through the lens of religion.
Catherine stepped off the stage, moving toward the front row of attendees.
And speaking of religion, ladies and gentlemen, I couldn't help but notice that we have in the audience with us tonight a world-renowned scholar of religious symbology, Professor Robert Langdon.
Langdon heard murmurs of excitement in the crowd.
What the hell is she doing? Professor, she said, arriving before him with a smile, I wonder if we might avail ourselves of your expertise for a moment. Would you mind standing up?
Langdon politely stood, quietly shooting her a you'll pay for this grin.
I'm curious, Professor, what is the most common religious symbol on Earth?
The answer was simple, and either Catherine had read Langdon's article on the topic and knew what was coming, or she was about to be very disappointed. Langdon accepted the microphone and turned to face the sea of eager faces, dimly lit by chandeliers hanging on ancient iron chains. Good evening, everyone, he said, his deep baritone booming through the speakers, and thank you to Dr. Solomon for putting me on the spot with no warning whatsoever. The audience clapped. All right, then, he said. The world's most common religious symbol. Does anyone have a guess?
12 hands went up.
Excellent, Langdon said. Any guesses that are not the crucifix?
Every single hand went down.
Langdon chuckled. It's true that the crucifix is extremely common, but it is also a uniquely Christian symbol. There is, in fact, one universal symbol that appears in the artwork of every religion in history. The audience exchanged puzzled looks. You've all seen it many times, Langdon coaxed. Perhaps on the Egyptian Horakhti Stela? He paused. How about the Buddhist Kanishka casket? Or the famed Christ Pantocrator?
Silence. Dead stares. Oh, boy, Langdon thought. Definitely a science crowd. It also appears in hundreds of the most celebrated Renaissance paintings. Leonardo da Vinci's second Virgin of the Rocks, Fra Angelico's The Annunciation, Giotto's Lamentation, Titian's Temptation of Christ, and countless depictions of Madonna and Child? Still nothing. The symbol I'm referring to, he said, is the halo. Catherine smiled, apparently knowing this would be his answer. The halo, Langdon continued, is the disk of light that appears over the head of an enlightened being. In Christianity, halos hover over Jesus, Mary, and the saints. Going further back, a sun disk hovered over the ancient Egyptian god Ra. And in Eastern religions, a nimbus halo appeared over the Buddha and the Hindu deities.
Wonderful, thank you, Professor, Catherine said, reaching for the microphone,
but Langdon ignored her and pivoted away playfully. A touch of payback. Never ask an historian a question you don't want answered fully. I should add, Langdon said as the crowd laughed appreciatively, that halos come in all shapes, sizes, and artistic representations. Some are solid gold discs, some are transparent, and some are even square. Ancient Jewish scripture describes Moses' head as being surrounded by a hilah, the Hebrew word for halo or emanation of light. Certain specialized forms of halos have rays of light emanating from them, glowing spines that radiate outward in all directions. Langdon turned back to Catherine with a devious smile. Perhaps Dr. Solomon knows what this type of halo is called? He tipped the mic to her. A radiant crown, she said without missing a beat. Someone did her reading. Langdon brought the mic back to his lips. Yes, the radiant crown is a particularly significant symbol. It appears throughout history adorning the heads of Horus, Helios, Ptolemy, Caesar, and even the towering Colossus of Rhodes. Langdon gave the crowd a conspiratorial grin. Few people realize this, but the most photographed object in all of New York City happens to be a radiant crown. Puzzled looks, even from Catherine. Any guesses? He asked. None of you has ever photographed the radiant crown that hovers 300 feet above New York Harbor? Langdon waited as the murmur of revelation grew in the crowd. The Statue of Liberty! Someone called out. Exactly, Langdon said. The Statue of Liberty wears a radiant crown, an ancient halo, that universal icon we have used through history to identify special individuals who we believe possess divine enlightenment or an advanced state of consciousness. As Langdon handed the mic back to Catherine, she was beaming. Thank you, she mouthed to him, as he returned to his seat amid applause. Catherine walked back onto the stage. As Professor Langdon has just stated so eloquently, humans have been contemplating consciousness for a long time. But even now, with advanced science, we have trouble defining it. In fact, many scientists are afraid even to discuss consciousness. Catherine glanced around and whispered, "They call it the C word." Scattered laughter rippled through the room again. Catherine nodded to a spectacled woman in the front. Ma'am, how would you define consciousness? The woman thought a moment. I suppose an awareness of my own existence? Perfect, Catherine said. And where does that awareness come from? My brain, I guess, she said. My thoughts, ideas, imaginations, the brain activity that makes me who I am. Very well said, thank you. Catherine lifted her gaze back to the audience. So, can we all start by agreeing on the basics? Consciousness is created by your brain, the 3-pound bundle of 86 billion neurons inside your skull, and therefore consciousness is located inside our heads. Nods all around.
Wonderful, Catherine said. We've all just agreed on the currently accepted model of human consciousness.
After a beat, she sighed heavily.
The problem is, the currently accepted model is dead wrong. Your consciousness is not created by your brain, and in fact, your consciousness is not even located inside your head.
A stunned silence followed. The spectacled woman in the front row said,
But if my consciousness is not located inside my head, where is it?
I'm so glad you asked, Catherine said, smiling to the assembled crowd. Settle in, folks. We're in for quite a ride tonight.
Rockstar, Langdon thought as he walked toward the hotel lobby, still hearing the echoes of Catherine's standing ovation.
Her presentation had been a dazzling tour de force that left the crowd stunned and clamoring for more. When someone asked about her current work, Catherine revealed she had just put the finishing touches on a book that she hoped would help redefine the current paradigm of consciousness. Langdon had helped Catherine secure a publishing deal, although he had yet to read her manuscript. She had revealed enough of its contents to leave Langdon enthralled and eager to read, but he sensed she had kept all the most shocking revelations to herself. Catherine Solomon is never short on surprises. Now, as he neared the hotel lobby, Langdon suddenly recalled that Catherine was slated for an 8 a.m. meeting this morning with Dr. Brigitte Gessner, the eminent Czech neuroscientist who had personally invited Catherine to speak at the lecture series. Gessner's invitation had been generous, and yet, after meeting the woman last night following the event and finding her insufferable, Langdon now secretly hoped Catherine would oversleep and opt for breakfast with him instead. Pushing it from his thoughts, he entered the lobby, enjoying the fragrance of the extravagant bouquets of roses that always graced the main entrance. The scene that greeted him in the lobby, however, was far less welcoming. Two black-clad police officers were stalking intently through the open space, working a pair of German shepherds. Both dogs wore bulletproof vests marked Polizei and were sniffing around as if searching for something. That doesn't look good.
Langdon went over to the front desk. Is everything okay?
Oh, heavens, yes, Mr. Langdon,
the immaculately dressed manager nearly curtsied as he rushed out to greet Langdon.
All is perfection, Professor. A minor issue last night, but a false alarm,
he assured, shaking his head dismissively.
Just taking precautions. As you know, security is a top priority here at the Four Seasons Prague.
Langdon eyed the policeman. Minor issue. These guys hardly looked minor.
Are you off to the swimming club, sir? The manager asked. Shall I call you a car?
No, thanks, Langdon replied, heading for the door. I'll jog over. I like the fresh air.
But it's snowing.
The native New Englander glanced outside at the faint skittering of snowflakes in the air and gave the manager a smile. If I'm not back in an hour, send one of those dogs to dig me out.